This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. It's Brian Hazio, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Yeah, Ray coming up in about 5 minutes. We've got Marcellus Wiley in about a half an hour. The Jays back in action tonight. They actually won a game yesterday, so that's a positive sign. And what do they get for that good fortune? Kenny the Yankees Giles. Waiting for them tonight. The Yankees waiting for them again tonight. Four-game series. Shoemaker on the mound for the Jays. And I guess you're looking – what are you looking for, redemption? You're looking to survive? You're looking to hold them to, I don't know, 35 runs over
Dude,
four
what
games?
What are those monsters going to do in that ballpark? They were banged up the last time they were in there 2 weeks ago. They are heating up. What are they going to do in that ballpark?
I don't know. It's ripe for the picking for the Yankees, I would think, tonight. And for the next 4 days, quite frankly. But the Jays got hit with the injury bug too, right? Like Ken Giles, it just got announced earlier this afternoon. He will go for Tommy John. So that wipes him out the rest of this year and likely all of 2021. I believe he's a free agent at the end of the year, so that hurts for him. Now he's going to have to take one of those. We'll see what you're made of contracts to get back in the league. And he missed out on a big contract if he could keep his arm intact and put up good numbers like he did a year ago.
Didn't Verlander, Brian, have the, he say he Verlander, announced the same thing? That's
yep,
crazy,
Verlander, man. Tommy John. Yeah. So he's done this year and next. He'll come back as a free agent, I believe, at the age of 37 or 38. Who knows what we're going to see from Verlander again. That's a big, big blow. You know, for his career, for his legacy, and for the Houston Astros, clearly. So you got that. You got Romano, who it doesn't look like he's going to return. Dolis got a little banged up over the course of the weekend because Vladdy Guerrero Jr. was playing it like it was a T-ball tournament on Saturday night. The way he played that, I guess it wasn't really a dribbler. I mean, it was a legit, you know, hit at Biggio, but he just
but no
his
business.
Instincts. No.
I saw your tweet, and then O's like, lay off the guy. He tried hard.
He almost had it.
No, he almost had it.
Oh, yeah. I was dying laughing because, yeah, I mean, you can tell.
It's like, just I, those are the basics of baseball, man.
It like really it
just
is.
His instincts. It makes me wonder, you know, is he a student of the game, or is he just so talented that, you know, it's not like he's been paying attention forever. He just knows that he gets into the cage and he can absolutely destroy baseballs, and he's not really doing that. So he's not doing that at the plate. Defensively, he's a liability. It's not a good sign for where Vladdy's at. But I guess they're waiting for the young buck, you know, to potentially make a return. Pearson, I think he threw off the mound for two simulated innings earlier today or yesterday, and I saw him in Buffalo, and everyone was kind of admiring his stuff, and he looks like he's getting closer to it. And he's going to return and not be a part of the rotation, but maybe there's your closer. Maybe there's a guy who gives you a big inning in the seventh or eighth, and his stuff is still nasty, hopefully. And they could use some sort of an injection of positivity right now.
Well, he's better than Randy Johnson right now, so we need him back in the lineup, right?
Yep. According to the grappler, that is just a fact.
Yeah. It's a lock. It's a lock.
It's a lock. Randy Johnson at his best pales in comparison
Speaking
to Nate
of
Pearson.
The grappler,
that's
got to
be
that.
Yeah.
What kind of action does the grappler bring to the golf course? Because I very soon am teeing it with the grappler.
I spoke to him about that earlier today. I'm sensing some nerves from grappler.
Yeah.
From the grappler, because I guess he played the round of his life over the weekend. So he's coming in hot, which is – for bad golfers, and he is a similar golfer to me. He hits the ball way longer than I do. But we shoot around the same. Like, he's a good golfer. Grappler's a good golfer. But when you're kind of a middle-of-the-road golfer like we are, and you play really well, it's almost the last thing you want because you're like, I'm going to spoil this the next time out. Like, it just – that's the way the universe works out. It evens itself out. It allows me to play well on Saturday, which means I'll be a chop on Tuesday. So he might get choppy tomorrow playing with you, but he can bomb it, man. He's a fun guy to play with. You'll have a good time with the grappler.
I think you'll get into his head right away, though. Like
I don't do anything stupid. Everyone's in their own carts. Everyone does their own thing. He can just do his own thing.
He's going to do his own thing, and he's going to shank a ball, and he's going to think, what does O think? And he's going to look over you, and you may actually be waving a fly away from your face, but he's going to think that you're shaking your head at him, and he's going to be rattled. I'm telling you right now, you're going to be in the grappler's head before he even gets to the course.
No,
I would be. If I played with you, and I know you're a great player, I would want to bring my best, and then all I would do is force it and embarrass myself.
Exactly. That's what happened to me when I played with him and his buddies a few weeks ago. I mean, I'm way better than that. Way better than that. And I was terrible because he was the third best player. The other two were better than him. So I'm like, this is great. Like,
not
clearly,
by a ton. Not by a ton.
Yeah. You were in there. You were in the race with them. Yeah. You're in the race.
I beat them both. Thank
Did
you very much.
We I got a guest that. On.
Yeah, well, I do.
Don't
I
recall that being.
I had the scorecard actually. So
really?
I don't
okay. Yeah. I never heard about my score. If you had the scorecard, what was I shooting? No one ever told me.
That all I know is you puked on 18. That's all I know.
Well,
with a shot.
Yeah.
Well, and you gave the wrong yardage. That was
was a different round, Noodles. These golf stories are all starting to intertwine,
exactly.
And it's generally all negative. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline here is Ray Ferraro. What's happening, Ray?
I'm after a good weekend of sports, kind of hanging around, getting ready for whatever the hell the week is. Got my last round of golf tomorrow, and as always, like, just excited to talk to you guys.
Well, why the last like round? It. Why last round?
Knee hinge fix on Thursday.
Oh, God,
wow. And that'll take me into January, I think. So.
How long? How much could you golf for? Like, how much longer could you golf for? Right up to December?
Probably till December 1st, yeah. And then it gets. Some guys play all year out here, and they've got these goofy shoes they wear that they can play when it gets wet. And I'm like, oh, well, why would you do that? Like, it's like you hit your drive, it goes in the air, it lands. It's like dropping a bowling ball in the middle of the fairway, right? Everything's so wet. I'm like, I don't want to do that. But yeah, guys are playing. Really pretty good conditions to the end of November, for sure.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's
not
bad at
all. He's asking the question about the U.S. Open. See what he says.
I saw the one online?
Yeah, so it was...
No chance.
No chance, right? Let's explain here. So you going up against... It's DeChambeau against O, Koliakovo, and Duffy. Scramble. So for those of you not familiar
with
that...
All at 6-under. DeChambeau's at 6-under. Our threesome as a group is 6-under. We tee it up, and Hayes thinks that DeChambeau beats us.
I think you lose by 10.
I don't think it's close, because you got to think you'll be playing the same course, right? So if we're playing like a course that we normally play, he shoots 60. You guys aren't shooting 60.
And it's a wing foot we're talking about here. So
okay,
it's even...
so you're a wing foot. You guys hit it into the rough, and you're in there for a week.
Yeah.
And he
it's a scramble, though. It's a scramble.
That's fine. Some of the best drives, they're all going to be in the rough. Like, you three options in the rough. Can you imagine Duffy with a weed whacker trying to get out of the rough?
And he would have that elbow brace strapped on so tight.
Yeah, he'd have to. He'd be going in for, full treatment before the round. He'd have acupuncture ready in between the ninth and the tenth tee.
You and Carlo would go and grind, and you'd work at it. Duffy would fold like a tent.
Mm-hmm. Carlo would
he'd
just be fishing.
Nervous.
Yeah, Carlo would be fishing. He'd be like, "This is a pretty decent pawn we got over here." No, it's you guys got no shot. But DeChambeau, we said it off the top of the show. That was a masterpiece. You know, to play Wingfoot, four rounds of par or better. Is as good as it gets. I mean, that's the best golf you're ever going to see from a human being on a course like that.
You know what I found, guys, really interesting, and I think it applies to any sport, is like you could almost hear the announcers hating what he was doing. Like, they hated it. They're like, how many times did you hear, "I'm not so sure this is good for golf"? Well, why not? He figured he did something that other guys can't do. And then they start talking about, is this the way it's always going to be? No, because Xander Schauffele is 135 pounds. He cannot hit it 380 yards. Like, if you physically you can do this, well, why not try it? But just think how hard it would be to have that touch and be that long.
Yeah, that's
because
the thing. It's
just,
his whole game.
He man, it's everything.
Yeah.
And I know he's goofy, and I know he's got these scientist ways, and people don't like that because it's different. But, man, I don't see how it's much different than what Tiger did back in the day. Remember when all the golfers were a bunch of fat guys? And then Tiger came on, and he's just shredded. He worked out like nobody before him.
Yeah.
And everybody said, oh, look, he's taking it to the next level. Well, that's what DeChambeau did. He's just not the same as Tiger, right? Like, yeah. Tiger's story was captivating from when he was hitting a golf ball in a dryer when he was on the Merv Griffin show, for crying out loud, or whatever it was.
Well, you wonder if the USGA is going to listen to Jack Nicklaus and do something about the golf ball, because as Jack said at the Memorial, there's no more land to start moving tees farther back than they already are. Like,
But doesn't that seem, like, reasonable?
What, the golf ball?
Yes. Because if you're still the longest guy, you're the longest guy. It just, instead of it going 385 yards, it goes 310 yards. But you're still the longest guy. Mm.
So what did they do?
When they started, Noodles, when they got into the goalie gear, and they were going to shrink it down, and the goalies were all, you know, they all got their pants in a knot. Yeah. And unless you were just a complete blob and a blocker, the best goalies are still the best goalies. Their goals against average went up a little bit, but they're still the best goalies. Their save percentage went down a little bit, but they're still the best. And right. I think it's the same thing here.
Well, was there an obligation or a sense of obligation for every goalie to dress bigger back when that was happening, Noodles? Like, did everyone just have to become a true believer and say, fine, give me those massive pads, the huge pants?
No, honestly, it depends. Like, for me, the only thing I did that I adjusted, as you kind of saw guys do, I loosened my pants. So my pants were more like a barrel instead of form-fitting. And what that did, it would just give me a couple inches in the midsection area. When, you know, you go down, it was just coverage. Like, my pads were always the same, and I like things tight. Jonathan Quick, I remember talking to him, and he was like, I like to feel my gear. Like, other guys, you couldn't even feel your gear because it was so big. So, you know, I tried things, but not everything, you know, not everything worked. You know, some guys, remember John Sebastian Daguerre, how big
huge,
he was?
Massive.
And then you'd see him off the ice, and you're like, he's skinny. He's a rail. Like, same thing with Chris Osgood. Chris Osgood, he's a lot smaller than me physically, but he looked as big as I did on the ice. And that's where I think, when it came to goaltenders, you needed streamlining. So a guy that was 6'4" and 220 pounds, that should be an advantage. That actually should be an advantage size, where what's happening is goalies were just being squared off because you could loosen the pants. You could, you know, wear things looser.
And it affects the psychology of a shooter, right?
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter how big the guy actually is. If you can't see the net, you can't see the net.
Yep.
We were in L.A. Do you remember a goalie named Frederick Chabot?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we picked up Freddie in a deal, and he came in, and Freddie's not a big guy. And he got into his pants, it like he stole them from a 300-pound guy. It was like he was standing in a barrel. And then he tucked in his chest protector inside his pants, and he puffed out even more. And I'm like, man, look at this. I had no idea. But why not? Like, if you can, why not do it? And it's like DeChambeau. Like, he can do things physically that other people just can't do. They can try and do whatever they want. The dude's a monster to start with. He weighs 230 pounds. And so he's got crazy swing speed. And so he can do things other guys can't. And until they figure out a way to make that not an advantage, why wouldn't he do it?
Well, there's always an overreaction. Like, now everyone just thinks he's going to win every major. He's not. Like, he's not going to win every tournament.
He wins Augusta.
I mean, he's going to be in contention. He's got to be there. But, like, is he all of a sudden better than Dustin Johnson? Like, on Wednesday, we said Johnson just put forth the greatest month of golf we've maybe ever seen. Now DeChambeau's better because of four rounds? I don't think so.
Now, do you think Brooks Koepka felt like he ate a poop sandwich?
A little bit.
After ripping DeChambeau like he did, and then, oh, look at this. I'm home injured, and this guy's stomping the field.
Right.
Oh, he's going to have to look a few guys in the eye that are just... I think Rory even had some comments about the putter and the way he putts. And...
Yeah, what's going on with Rory here? Apparently he was criticizing the way guys were putting. Is that or
well,
holding the putter?
Well, it was about DeChambeau, but I didn't think it was necessarily critical. He was saying what we're all thinking. Like, this is different and, wow, it's weird, but it works. You know, like, okay, I guess, go for it. Like, because it's not just bombing off the tee. You got to have a short game, which he did. You got to putt. You got to, you know, play smart. And that's what happened.
When he came out of college, guys, I was playing golf and with a guy that didn't play very much. And he asked me, he said, why does it not make sense that all your clubs are the same length? Like, he could hit a 5-iron and everything else was a disaster. And he's like, well, you don't have a different stick for the power play or a different. And I'm like, no, I don't. And I'm like, I don't even really know why. Because they're always this length. And DeChambeau's got all his clubs the same way. Man,
right.
The guy's a scientist and he's, you know, he studied this stuff and he understands it. It works for him. Nobody was saying DeChambeau was the way 2 weeks ago when Dustin Johnson lapped the field and was 30 under.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Things
so,
come and go. That's the way it works. And, you know, it feels like that could be the case with Alex Pietrangelo in St. Louis, where those negotiations have gone public all of a sudden, or something leaked in terms of what the Blues are willing to offer him, maybe what he's looking for, maybe he will get to free agency. You know, if there's truth in that St. Louis is willing to go to 7.7, and Noodles made the point, and I think it's an appropriate one, that means really it's $8 million. You know, like if it has to be $8 million, then fine, it's $8 million. But to use that as a bold number, that's not nine and a half, ten and a half, maybe 11,
right,
which is what Doughty and Carlson are making. Where do you see this going with Pietrangelo, St. Louis, and the free market if he gets there?
Well, my understanding is the real stumbling block is the bonus money that he wants. You know, he wants significant chunks of bonus money, like the players seem to get now. The one thing that ownerships or management's kind of lost the plot on, I think, was paying these guys gigantic sums of bonus money on July 1st. And now, like, look at all the money that teams had to pay out this past July. Now, this is a crazy summer, but, you know, so that's really not fair to say, oh, see, look, they had to pay and there's no season. That's a little bit unfair. It makes the deals really difficult to move further down the line if you don't have a full no move. St. Louis has never apparently signed a deal that's had bonus money in it. They've acquired players that have bonus money, but they've not signed one. And so part of this stalemate, or whatever you want to call it, is that he wants bonus money because that's what all the top free agents have done, and St. Louis doesn't want to do it. And so of the 7.7 to 8 or the 7 years to 8 years and all that other stuff, this is a real problem, and they haven't figured out a way to get past it. And maybe he go, and it's beginning to look more and more like, you know, if each side's dug in on that, well, you're not going to fix it. You know, another 2 weeks isn't going to fix it. It's still going to be, I want the bonus money. You can't have the bonus money. Okay, well, now we got a problem.
Mm-hmm. Where do you think he lands, Ray? Where do you think's a good fit? And yes.
Well, of course, I mean, we're in Toronto. Of course, Toronto would be fantastic, right? Like, the guy's a legit top one or two guy on your team. He's a one on 90% of the teams. You know, I don't know that he's, you know, that there's many players you could even possibly acquire that would be in his sphere. Like, when do these guys become available? They don't, and if they do, you've got to trade half your team to go get them. So I think Toronto's a good spot, or a legit spot. I think Boston's a legit spot. You know, Torrey Krug goes, there's $5 million. What if they go back to Chara at 42 years old and say it's not $3 million, it's $1
million? Right.
There's another couple of million. Now you're in the ballpark, and you're like, wow, how about Boston with Pietrangelo? Like, that would be... That would be legit. I would think Calgary would be all over it.
Winnipeg?
Do they have the cap space, Noodles?
Well, yeah,
I think
Winnipeg does, because Big Buff's money's gone, right? Like, that's...
Well, and that defense last year was
Well,
Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, even though you hadn't even really heard of Neil Pionk, but a bunch of guys that you never heard of.
I think, looking at Winnipeg's cap structure, I think they've got four unrestricted free agents back there. Like, Chevy has to rebuild that defensive core. If any
Well,
team,
you can rebuild a lot of it with him, right?
That's what I was saying it to the guys in the 4 o'clock hour. I believe Winnipeg, if it was just straight on fitting him in, I think it would be a great fit for them, because if you look at it, they've got Kulikov, Spezza, Beaulieu, DeMello, and Bieto are all unrestricted free agents, and they've got to sign Sammy Niku. The rest are Morrissey, Pionk, Dahlstrom, and Poolman are under contract, and they're all, you know,
you can make that work.
Time.
You can definitely make it work.
I got news for anybody. Those are not names that you're running to the wall for.
Exactly.
Like, they're, as one GM says, they're just a guy. Meaning, like, you can find another guy like that.
Yeah, right.
And, man, you drop Petrangelo into the middle of something like that, well, now you're getting somewhere. But if I'm a team that's even close to having the space, I'm on the case of figuring it out. Like, can I make a legit offer? Can I make him interested in what we have to say?
Well, if you isolate it to the Canadian teams, Montreal, no, they have Weber and Petrie on the right side. You know, like, obviously they have room, and it would just be an embarrassment of riches, but I don't picture them being in. Ottawa, no, he's not going there, and they're not spending. Vancouver, no, because they're up against the cap, and I think Tanev's already walking. I don't think they could make that work. I guess they could if they traded Besser or something.
If they walked away from Stetcher too, right?
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. You're walking away from guys you wouldn't normally do, but Stetcher's going to be a couple of million. Tanev's over four. Markstrom's at six. There's 12. And if I've got to pitch all of that, or, you know, 8.5 of that to Petrangelo, I'm doing it.
Yeah. So maybe, like, Vancouver isn't
the mix. How would Petrangelo and Hughes look together?
Yeah.
Probably pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It'd be maybe the best pairing in the league. I mean, it would have potential to be the best pairing. And then there's Edmonton, who they need them too. But do they have, you know, are they far along into the, we got to eat cap, eat cap, eat cap, to be able to make a pitch? I mean, they're no different than anyone else in Canada.
I don't think they've got any room to make a move like this. But if you're Petrangelo, and you're talking about teams, and all of a sudden you're, wait a minute, you could play with McDavid, and, you know, this is, I know what happens for anybody that gets mentioned in the breadth of Edmonton, but yeah, that's a selling point. The one thing I will say about Petrangelo, he's not really, I mean, not terrible at it, but he's not really a number one power play guy. So that would be something that you would have to expect when, you know, you might get him and think he can do that too. That's not really what he does. That's not that makes him a worse fit or anything. It's just, you know, something to keep in mind as you're thinking about what he could do.
Speaking of that, game two, Stamkos, we'll find out tonight, but a lot of people are basically circling him as a power play specialist. Like, can you make sense of that if you're John Cooper? Do you take a guy out of the lineup for Stamkos for 7 or 8 minutes tonight of him at 65%?
100%. I would. I mean, they got 7D. They got that monster that plays 30 minutes a night in Hedman. Mm-hmm. You don't need 7D. Their power play's 0 for, I think, 14. They got one power play goal in the last 7 games. Man, even if you're just playing him a couple of shifts and he stands in that left circle, even if he doesn't do anything terribly effective, he's there, and they have to worry about him.
Yeah.
The one thing to remember too, though, it's not, this just isn't like a regular guy coming back in the playoffs and, oh, what a great story. And he hasn't played in 6 or 7 months. Like, this is a big ask.
Right.
So to think that he would even be, I don't know, anywhere near, like, what did you say, Brian? 65%?
Give or take.
Injury.
It's not, it can't be any more than that, right? Like, he's just skating around in morning skates. Like, he hasn't had an exhibition game. He hasn't had anything. It would be a lot.
When did he get hurt?
Oh, gosh. Did he? February?
Yeah.
No idea.
It was before the shutdown. It was a few weeks before the shutdown, I believe.
And then he was, you know, it looked like he was on pace to play in the second round when there was, you know, the regular scheduling. And then he got hurt again doing, I don't know what, like, you know, in training or whatever. And then, well, of course, it's now, you know, now here we are in September and he's still not ready. or borderline not ready.
Well, I mean, but it'll be fun if he plays, right?
It's, you know, it'd be good. It would be something interesting.
Yes, it would be. And they could use
we
it.
We need interest. We can need it. Juice.
Need clickbait. Yeah. Need it tonight. All right, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Okay, talk to you later. And, oh, no chance. You guys can't beat the Shamble. I'd like to support you on this one, but he just can't.
No, there's no. It's just not even close. I think he'd get lapped. The three of you, even if you add me in on it, no way. No chance.
Was that supposed to help?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. I'm like, I might give you a shot or two, like maybe.
Okay, well, next fall or next spring, let's get a tour player and just see where it stands, like on a normal course.
That
like
would
Weston.
Be fun. Yeah, we'll play somewhere in Toronto and, yeah,
and
we'll
get
the let up
gotta be a,
could
yeah,
you get Graham DeLette?
Yeah.
Could you get a guy like Graham DeLette?
Well, if
well,
he wants to
like that.
Fly into Toronto or something. But even
I think I told you guys a month ago or 6 weeks ago, Dan Murphy and I played with Nick Taylor. And we played it where they played the Canadian event when it was out in Vancouver at Northview. And we played from the back tees, and Murph and I shot about 80. Nick didn't break a sweat and shot 63. Like, it was like the only similarity was we all had golf clubs.
Right. You're breathing and you're playing golf.
Yeah,
that's it.
The pro we were with, he's like, okay, you guys hit it over this left bunker. Nick, your line's way over here. Like, it was like a different world. And Nick's not especially long. So I that would be really fun, play a scramble against a tour guy.
Yep.
And then get smashed. They just pound you, and you'd be like, wow, do we suck.
It would be a rude awakening, and we probably don't need any more of those. We play enough
to know we suck.
Yeah, but we'll see. All right, buddy, we'll do it tomorrow at 5.
Okay, see you. Have a good day, guys.
Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's Maple Toyota's birthday, and they're giving you the gifts this month. Buy any new vehicle and receive a free gift. Red Tag savings continue with rates from 0%. Who is the MVP through 2 weeks? Is it a lock to be Russell Wilson? Could it be Josh Allen, Kyler Murray? Or is Cam listed in that? Lots to get into with Marcellus Wiley, and we'll tee up the Monday Nighter with him as well. We'll do that next.
Monday Nighter in Vegas. J-Mac, if you're listening, our next trip or giveaway better be a hockey game / football game in Vegas.
That would be a great trip. Oh. A great trip. You go there in October or November.
We'll marry 9 people if we have to. We don't care.
If the world gets proper, we're all going, and it'll be fantastic.
We're all going.
It's
going
to be outstanding. It may not be for another 2 or 3 years.
Let's hope.
This is a new stadium, just like the one we saw in L.A. with the Rams and the Chargers, that will be unveiled to the world without fans. So no fans in Vegas tonight. The Saints rolling in there, -4 favorites tonight. Here he is from FS1, longtime NFLer, former Bill, Marcellus Wiley. What are you expecting out of this game tonight in Vegas?
Oh, it's going to be interesting. You always get a bump of energy, even if it's going to be an empty stadium, just having the new dig. So imagine when you bought your first house. It wasn't necessarily furnished, wasn't necessarily full of energy, but just the fact that you got something new and nice makes you feel good. Take me back to my days when we played against the Tennessee Titans, and we used to play them at a college stadium while they were transitioning to their new digs. And the same team rolled out there but just being in their new environment, and they played completely different to the tune of them being only 1 yard away from winning the Super Bowl that year. But I just expect them, the Raiders, to come out with some energy, but that's going to be matched potentially by what New Orleans has been the last several years in particular, just a team that knows its way, 13 wins last year. Obviously, coming to this year, still banking on the fact that they can win their division, big divisional win in week 1, and trying to come back and support that. No Michael Thomas is going to hurt, but the machine of Drew Brees and Sean Payton should still be enough to carry them past the Raiders.
Well, sticking with that theme in terms of mentalities in a certain building, the Niners are going to be fighting it next week, right? They were at New York. They're at MetLife this past weekend against New York, the Jets. They smoked the Jets, but they lose Bosa for the year. They lose a couple of different guys, including potentially Garoppolo. I haven't seen the latest on him, on whether or not he'll be playing next week. Mostert got injured as well, who's now their kind of go-to number one running back. And they got to go back into that building next week.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, man. That schedule. How does that happen?
And they got to go west before they can't stay in New York because of COVID. So what are they thinking in with the Niners when you land back in New York and you walk back into that building where, yeah, you won a ball game, but it was carnage for your team?
Yeah, it's really difficult to balance out the reality of you lost so many guys and really important pieces for your roster, for your team, for your confidence, and the mentality of next man up that every single player in the NFL has to subscribe to. You think about the NFL, and it's not just the Patriot way. It's the NFL's way of how many times I've been in practice, let alone a game, and you see a guy have a potential career-ending injury, not just season-ending, career-ending injury. And you know what the mentality is? You know what you hear from your coaches? I hope he's okay. Move the huddle up 10 yards. Let's get going, guys. Let's keep playing. And it's really interesting how you have to compartmentalize and put those things in its proper place, but still be fully motivated to go out there for the task at hand. And we've seen teams before. Let's go back recent history. When you're the Philadelphia Eagles, you lose your NFL MVP leading candidate in Carson Wentz, and the guys can look around the locker room and say, man, we lost our leader. We're in trouble. And they weren't in trouble. They actually went out there and still won a Super Bowl. So it's just a lot of ways it could play. The law of averages say that the team will take a step back because they lost so many key pieces. But there's a way that they could go out there and kind of play greater than the sum of its parts. And that's the mentality you have to have until you prove it otherwise.
All right, Marcellus Wiley with us. I give you the option of these two quarterbacks. You can pick one of them for the rest of your season. Who are you taking, Cam Newton or Josh Allen?
Oh, I love both. I mean, I'm a Josh Allen fan. I think a lot of people out there want to slight Josh Allen in terms of what he did in Houston last year and those last waning seconds and minutes. That obviously is not going to help anybody believe in you. But then when you saw you Cam Newton, woo, talking about hit the ground running. And all the conversation and question marks about his intangibles have to be forgotten right now because he certainly hit the ground running when it comes to him playing in New England. We question his buy-in, his trust in the system, his leadership, and he has showed up to play. All that said, I would have to take Cam Newton just because of the galvanizing effect that he has in terms of his teammates buying in. Here's an example. If I played with Cam Newton, I would think we had a higher ceiling, even if that's not the reality, than if I played with Josh Allen, just to be for real. And it is shown even yesterday. Julian Edelman has won a Super Bowl MVP. Julian Edelman is a fringe Hall of Fame player. And Julian Edelman had a career game yesterday in only his second game playing with Cam Newton, despite playing numerous years with Tom Brady. So I just think that effect of the star power, the impossible being conquered with Cam Newton, give him the edge.
Sticking with quarterbacks, Russell Wilson got the job done again for Seattle last night. I think they were saying on the broadcast he's never had an MVP vote. I mean, is this guy underappreciated, or where do you think Russell Wilson lies in all this talk about who's the best quarterback in the game?
I think that the long story short is he's Drew Brees 2.0. Drew Brees came along in the years when there was a Tom Brady, Peyton Manning rivalry and found himself just on the outside of that conversation. Mm-hmm. And then it shifted from Tom Brady and Peyton Manning to Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. And Drew Brees found himself on the outside again. Well, I think Russell Wilson's in the same position. When he came in the league, it was Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. And then all of a sudden, Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson jump in, and they almost kind of put him on the outside despite him having tremendous success and tremendous numbers. But the national conversation has been driven by those quarterbacks I just mentioned, Brady, Manning, Rodgers, Mahomes, Jackson now, and they all have one thing in common, NFL MVPs. Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl and should have probably won two, but not an MVP vote in sight. And it's interesting, last year he started fast again. Think about this year, and we all see what he's doing. It's amazing. Last year he had 22 touchdowns and only one interception after nine games. But he didn't finish the season strong when all of the NFL MVP conversation came to Seattle. So for me, Russell Wilson has to do what all great players have to do. If you want to be thought of at the next level and the next tier, you have to be consistently excellent. And he has been great, and he has been a tremendous quarterback, but just short of what those other guys have shown, whether it's in long stints or even short spurts. He has to finish what he starts right now. And this year has been insane. Hopefully he keeps it up.
Marcellus, did you were you fine with the play call for Newton to run in last night on the one with game on the line? I mean, obviously he'd had such an amazing game, but hindsight, you're looking back on it, I would have bet money that he would have made it in the end zone and Seattle made a great stand. Were you fine with that call, or do you want them to be a little bit more creative?
No, that was a horrible call. Look, I get why they made the call. They were leaning into the playbook of power and leaning into the physics. Cam Newton in the power. But the problem with that was you sent the motion to alert everyone you were going there. And more importantly, to blow up a play like that, I played with a guy named Rodney Harrison, who was always a power stopper. Because all you have to do is have one fearless defender, a kamikaze of sorts, who just throws caution to the wind and just blows it up. And we saw that happen yesterday on the goal line, and that play doesn't stand a chance if someone is going to kamikaze the play. So I would have been more creative, a run play option, a run pass option, even a rollout with the potential to pass, something to get him in better space to allow him the opportunity to read and scan the field and then make the correct football play. But that play seemed a little bit of conventional wisdom meets archaic football of yesteryear. So for me, sitting at home on the couch, it didn't look creative enough to allow Cam Newton to exploit the play.
How did you like Tom Brady's bounce back? Do you think all goods in Tampa Bay, is there enough there to convince you that they can get on a roll here? Concerns, or where are you at with Tom and Tampa?
Oh, they're contenders. And Tom Brady, imagine this. And you don't have to imagine much because it's a reality. In 21 years of football, he's never been 0-2. What the hell? And then, I mean, it's insane. But beyond that, the years he was 0-1, 3 years he lost his first game. Those 3 years, he goes to the Super Bowl all three of those years, and he wins two of them. So 0-1 Tom Brady is amazing. 0-2 Tom Brady has never happened in his career. So I look at the landscape, NFC teams, who is there to fear? If you're Tampa Bay, you feel like you're in it. There's no one you're scared of. New Orleans, you shut down Drew Brees, you shut down Alvin Kamara, you shut down Michael Thomas, and you lose a game to a team that has won the division the last 3 years, and they have continuity. And this pandemic, you're not mad at that, and you're not scared. Then you look at all the other teams, Green Bay, which is still feasting off its division. How much better are they than a 13-win team last year? San Francisco just got the MASH unit out with all the injuries. Who knows how they'll return and will they return to form? Minnesota last year won 10 games. Are you scared of Minnesota this year? They beat New Orleans last year in the playoffs. I just look around the league. I don't see the team to fear in the NFC. Everyone has their warts. So if I'm Tampa Bay with Tom Brady on the throne, I fear no one, including the teams that we're going to face going forward.
Great stuff as always, buddy. Enjoy the Monday Nighter tonight. We'll do it again this time next week.
Let's do it, guys. Take care, brothers. Talk to you soon.
Marcellus Wiley from FS1, longtime NFLer. Don't sleep on that team in the north, though. Aaron Rodgers, woo,
yeah.
He did it again yesterday, like just laying a beating on Detroit. Detroit was up quick. They were up 14-3 before you even turned the TV on.
What is happening there? Is that the LaFleur offense, or is it Aaron Rodgers saying, you know what, I'm going to listen to you? Is he pissed off and motivated by the draft pick? Hayes, as a Green Bay fan, what is your answer?
I think it's all of the above. Everything you said, Aaron Jones came out after the game, and Jones had one of those games. I didn't know if he was going to double down on his season last year. Like, Jones had a breakout remarkable stat-stuffing season, and that might have been the best game he's ever played yesterday when you look at the stats. And he came out after the game and said, it's even better for us in year two because now we've really got it down what LaFleur wants us to do. And it speaks to continuity, right? Like, yeah, they didn't have a camp the same way they generally would. They didn't have exhibition games, but they had last year where they really performed well. They were 13-3 and got to an NFC title game. It ended poorly. I was there live. They got destroyed. But since then, they've responded. They don't look like they're, you know, dealing with any hangovers now. Like, they are 8-0 against the NFC North with Rodgers and LaFleur over the past 2 years. They beat Minnesota at Mini in week one, Detroit this past week at Lambeau. I mean, they are doing to the NFC North what the Pats have been doing to the AFC East for years. And if you do that, you take care of your own division, you're in. And they're going to get in if they stay healthy.
The Vikings fans, Kirk Cousins, like, we all know people, the random people that are Vikings fans.
Yep. Messes.
They hate Cousins.
Yep. They got roasted yesterday again.
Yes.
Like, that's week 2 weeks in a row. They got destroyed.
Destroyed. And yep, it's coming to a point where that's a mistake, that whole operation, bringing in Kirk Cousins at that contract.
Yeah.
Massive amounts of money. I think they gave him $88 million.
Fully guaranteed, too. It was like the first time ever. It was a 3-year fully guaranteed deal. And listen, he can't do it alone. He hasn't been good.
I know,
but they're not getting that defense getting shredded, too. Even Phillip Rivers took them for a dance, man. That defense is supposed to be great, and it just hasn't been. Mike Zimmer's starting to freak.
He gets tuned up, though. Like, he's got a little Jay Cutler in him, right?
He's
a
whipping boy.
People just hate him. Yeah, people just hate
him. He's a whipping boy.
Yeah.
He is. But
they hate him.
Yeah, listen, Brady, I didn't think he was great, but he was good enough, and he's going to get better, I think, with more time with those receivers. And there were a lot of drop balls yesterday. Arians, you know, roasted his receivers postgame again because of the drop balls. But Atlanta, I don't know how they recovered or what happened in Dallas yesterday. I have no idea. Carolina's basically tanking.
Can you explain something to me? Davis Sanchez said this on SportsCenter, which boggles my mind. If it has to be true, he played in the NFL. He was saying the opposition doesn't have to wait for the football to go 10 yards. They can jump on it at any time. Why didn't they jump on the football?
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
I don't know what the explanation was. The only thing I can think of is that guys were afraid, you know, you're going to jump on it, you're going to muff it or something.
Sports
and
loose,
that it's, exactly, and you're the one that decided to screw up the game. I don't know. I mean, it was one of the goofiest onside kicks in the history of football.
I have never seen that kick. I don't even know what they call that.
It was like a spinner move. All I could think of when you see players that go for the ball and whiff it, was it Leon Lett for the Cowboys? Was that
ran the wrong way?
No, he went to touch it and fell, and it was a gong show. Do you remember? It was like I'm pretty sure he was for the Cowboys.
Yep. They had one in the snow where they shouldn't have touched
and
it.
And
he
wasn't supposed to touch
show.
It, and he slipped and
you're
went
right.
into the ball.
I think that might have been at the Bills, maybe too. Or,
yeah.
I don't
yeah.
remember, but yeah, you're right. There have been examples of that, and guys don't want to get roasted.
No,
for
they don't
want to
do
play.
That. But these, you know, that was a crazy onside. That was a crazy game, that finish.
It
that
was.
Yeah.
Well, we got to deal with LeBron later. Pierre's coming on at 6:25. He is going to be unbearable.
All right.
Well, they should be 0-2. Like, the Cowboys can't be happy with their performance.
No question.
Like,
they're a joke.
They do not look
joke.
That good. They do not. But they're lucky they're in a bad division. The Giants are terrible. Washington's not that good. And Carson Wentz sucks. Now, Carson Wentz is brutal. And Philly's in a bad spot. Like, that feels like just like last year. Someone's going to get in at 8-8 or 9-8, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess 17-game series or season begins next year. But 8-8, I think, gets in. Maybe 7-9. It doesn't look like a good division. So LeBron coming up around 6:25. Nota Begay on the U.S. Open at 6:05. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Nota Begay will join us into the next hour. And we'll also catch up with Pierre LeBrun, our hockey insider. Game 2 of the Cup Final tonight. Jays, Yankees, Monday nighter. Got to make a pick tonight, too, I guess.
You do.
Yeah, I'm on the clock. It's Saints -4 at Vegas. And we'll get to that in the next hour as well, right? So there's a lot going on. I saw that there were some reports out there, I believe The Athletic reporting, that Nick Nurse is making $8 million a year.
I don't know about that. That was just a random blurt out by somebody from on Twitter. Well, somebody just said
I think Blake Murphy, but he's pretty connected.
I could see that. I wasn't shocked by that number. Like, the, oh, doesn't that
how
seem-
the how the Toronto connected people don't have any kind of gauge on that number, and he just blurts it out, and it was just kind of a roundabout. He was like above 8 million or something. I'm not discrediting the guy. I just find it weird how Toronto connected people don't have that before him.
Well, I'm not. He is from Toronto, though. Blake Murphy is from Toronto. He covers the Raptors. Like, if it was him, he would be connected. And no, I didn't see everything he had to write. I just saw it jump up on Twitter that, you know, they were saying around 8 million. And regardless, if it's in the ballpark, it doesn't really matter if it's 8.5, 7.8. It's a boatload of money. Right. And my read on that was that's Masai again going to the mat for his guy, and as we discussed a lot last week, he's got a ton of leverage. You know, like, you want me to stick around? Well, Nick's got to stick around at 8, so you guys figure it out.
Masai's in double digits then.
Yeah, my apologies to Blake Murphy. I don't know who that is. Sorry.
Well,
okay, well,
we're not here
to throw stones or disparage people.
You weren't taking shots at him. You were saying we hadn't heard anybody report what Nick Nurse makes. But I could 100% believe that he makes $8 million a year.
That would be high-end Popovich, you know, Spoelstra type.
Those guys
money.
Are double digits.
Those guys would be.
Yeah.
And Nurse wins a title, and then Coach of the Year, he should get paid a lot of money. You know, it's not our money, so what do we care?
Eight sheets too?
I don't know what he makes, but he's been there forever. He's been in Miami for over a decade, and he's won, and he's going likely back to another NBA Finals. I'd be surprised if he's not making a lot of money.
Yeah. I thought when Dwayne Casey went to Detroit, I thought he signed like $5 million a year.
He signed for $5 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a five or seven-year deal at $5 million.
Yeah.
So Nurse has topped that, and you have to top that, right? Like, if Casey's getting $5 million, Nurse has got to get more than that. So – we'll see. And I guess the awards are being announced in the 6 p.m. hour, too, for the NHL. So we'll find out who came in for the Hart, the Norris, Rookie of the Year, the whole nine. We'll keep you updated on that in the next hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.